This week we are starting our study of Parshat Ki Teitzei. Last week we finished Parshat Shoftim, and even just thinking about the end of Parshat Shoftim, in what way, what acts as a bridge between Parshat Shoftim into Parshat Ki Teitzei, very clearly. Well, Egel Rufa was the exception. That was how we subverted the clear transition from Parshat Shoftim into Parshat Ki Teitzei. Louder? Issues of war. Issues of war. Remember at the very end of Parshat Shoftim, we talked about this in the last year that we had. Three of the last four topics are who does and does not go out to war, who do we go and give overtures of peace to before we go to war with them, and who do we simply go to eradicate in the context of Eretz Yisrael? What means can we use to siege a city in the context of a war? That we're not allowed to cut down fruit trees. Now, Egla Arufa, which was the actual concluding topic of the Parsha, broke up the context of war, but war is very much underlying the end of Parshat Shoftim. And in what way does it begin Parshat Ki Teitzei? Just wanted to see everybody's awake. Good. Yes, Ki Teitzei La Milchama Alavecha is the opening Pasuk. Ki Teitzei La Milchama Alavecha, when you go out and wage war against your enemy. And so war is linking these two together. That being said, obviously Parshat Ki Teitzei is going to be its own entity, as we talked about in Parshat Shoftim, that the very fact that it ends with Egel Arufa shows that it's dealing with war in a totally different context. But we wouldn't have even needed that. The very fact that the Torah divides it and gives us a new Parsha of Parshat Ki Teitzei. What's unique about Parshat Ki Teitzei? What begins to give it its own identity? What's the difference in the nature of war as it's being described and dealt with in the beginning of Parshat Ki Teitzei, as opposed to how it was being dealt with at the end of Parshat Shoftim? Less technical, more inside the words, more inside what's happening. The context of Ki Teitzei La Milchama Alavecha is very specific, very unusual, and very different than the context of the way that we're dealing with war in Parshat Shoftim. On a simple level, it's not even thinking so deeply. Just look at the way war is being dealt with in the Parshat Shoftim, and look at the totally different way that we're talking about war, the context that we're talking about war, and Parshat Ki Teitzei. Parshat Shoftim, who does and who does not go out to war when you're talking to the entire people? Who do you go and do you seek shalom with, and who do you wipe out? When you're fighting a whole city, you don't cut down fruit trees. Parshat Ki Teitzei opens up with what? In what in the context of war? Eshet Yifat Tor. The very unusual halacha that in the context of war, if a male soldier goes out and he sees a woman from the side that they're fighting against, who he's attracted to, and he's unable to overcome his lust for her, he goes through a whole long procedure of taking her back, cutting her nails, shaving her head, putting her in different clothing, and then eventually if he decides to marry her, then he can marry her. Very odd halakha on a lot of levels. Since when in Chumash do we ever have a situation where you have a person who has desires that are inappropriate and the Torah bends to the will of those desires? When do we ever allow a Jew to marry a non-Jew? The whole thing is very odd. And we're not going to get into the details of that in the Shirim. It's a very, very odd halakha. But in terms of the content, in terms of the topic, what's shifting here? Parshat Shoftim was talking about big picture. It was talking about the klal. It's talking about going out to war in general. It's talking about war in and of itself. The beginning of Parshat Ki Teitzei doesn't focus on the army, but focuses on each individual soldier. It's not talking about a particular person in war. There's such a thing as an army that ends up lusting for a woman. There's a particular soldier that has that problem. Everything in Parshat Shoftim deals with systems that define the klal in Klal Yisrael. Remember, we talked about Parshat Shoftim as a whole that introduces so many systems of leadership. The introduction of a court system, the appointing of a king, issues of Kohanim and Levim, a Navi, how it's the rise of leadership in Klal Yisrael and guiding those leaders, guiding Klal Yisrael as a Klal, as a society that's run by Mishpat, that's run by Yad Hashem, that's run by a recognition, a bringing forth of Ratzon Hashem to guide the entirety of the people. And so too, in the issues of war, it's again, as a whole group, who goes out to war? When we're going out to war, we're sifting out those who can't go so we can go out to war. Against whom? And when we go out to war, what don't we do when we go out to war? And then we shift into Parshat Ki Teitze. We're shifting to the individual soldiers. War continues, but now it moves to a much more personal level. And there's nothing more personal in the context of war than the internal struggles of an individual soldier in the context of that war. And it was embedded in the warfare of that time as well. What's one of the reasons why he had to have the woman, the Eshet Yifat Toar, switch from the clothing she previously on and put on less beautiful clothing? Why did it make it less attractive? In the times of war, were they going and sitting in front of a mirror and getting themselves dressed up for the enemy to arrive?
Yeah.
Why?
That could be a war strategy.
That was a war strategy, exactly. Back in those days, that was a war strategy. In order intentionally to distract the soldiers. 100%. But that we're moving in from a totally different mode. A totally different vantage point of, again, moving from the klal into moving to the issues of the personal soldier in the context of that war. Again, not going into the details of that issue. We'll talk about it briefly towards the end of this shiur. But not going into the details of that issue. If this is the opening of Parshat Ki Teitze, what does that say about the Parsha as a whole? Parshat Ki Teitze is a Parsha that's full of mitzvot. It's on a list, and I already put it in a list of three parshiot that really, like every other mitzvah, every other pasuk is another mitzvah. On the level of Parshat Mishpatim, Kedoshim, this week's Parsha, you guys were like still back in Shemot. Mishpatim, Kedoshim, Ki Teitze. These are parshiot where really every pasuk, every half pasuk, every other pasuk, you're really moving into a whole nother mitzvah every time, and it's very hard to find an underlying theme in a parsha like that. Parts like that are very jumbled, they're very hard to understand, to try and really figure out. Like we often put, even the topics on the board, we have like 15 topics of Parshat Shoftim. It would be, we'd spend the entire time today just putting up every single topic if we were to go through every topic in Parshat Ki Teitze. But what this indicates to us about the nature of Parshat Ki Teitze is that Ki Teitze is moving in to the realm of the individual. And so the parsha is going to move into the personal in general. It's all about the individual within the context of Klal Yisrael. All of Devarim, all the way up and through until this point, and all of Devarim past this point, it's all preparing Klal Yisrael to enter into Eretz Yisrael. But now in this parasha, we're going and taking everything in those preparations and bringing them into a personal level. Let's take a look at, again, we're not going to go through them in detail, and I'm not claiming to understand how every single mitzvah fits this paradigm. But you take a look at the nature of the mitzvot in this parasha. They get very personal, they get very individualized. There are a ton of mitzvot in this parsha about interpersonal relationships. What happens if a man gets married to a woman and he ends up being very angry with her and then starts to spread lies about her to the people and how to deal with that when there's these deep problems in the early stages of a marriage? Issues of rape. A mamzer, the issues of divorce are introduced for the first time in this parsha. Personal issues down, and it's a very, it's a very deep concept in and of itself, but issues of when you go out to war, that when Jews go out to war, there's a recognition that even though you're focused on that war, who is it that's going to allow you to win that war? What is the only mitigating factor? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Is HaKadosh Baruch Hu with me or not? And the requirement to make sure that the encampment that you have when you're going out to war stays kadosh. Vaya machanecha kadosh, the paragraph in Perek Chav Gimel, Psukim Yud to Tet Vav. And that when you go out to war, that not only do you take your weapons with you, but what else are Jews required to take with them when they go out to war? The exact opposite of what you would expect. The farthest thing possible from a Sefer Torah in our minds. You're required to take weapons and a shovel. Because if you need to use the bathroom, you have to go outside of the camp and you have to dig a hole. You have to make sure that there remains a reality of Kedusha in the camp. And that's how it frames it. Pasuk Yudalet, Perek Av Gimel, Pasuk Yudalet. V'yatei tiyeh lecha ala zeinecha. You have to have a shovel in addition to your weapons. So that way when you use the bathroom, you can go, and that's what the pasuk that leads into. Pasuk Tadvav. Ki Hashem Elokecha mitalech bekerev machanecha, because God is walking within your camp. L'hatzilcha, to save you. V'latet oivecha lefanecha, and to give you your enemies before you. V'haya machanecha kadosh. Incredibly powerful paragraph. That also, by the way, gives rise to all of the halachot of in front of what and near what can you and can you not say brachot and devarim shevekedusha. A huge chunk of Chelek Aleph Mishneh Berurah. But then it's all premised in this concept of Ayamech Nech HaKadosh. But that's a very personal thing. And again, all of these issues of interpersonal laws, of cleanliness, tzarat, lending, how you use your money, how you deal with your field, and how you treat others who come into your field, how you treat your workers, do you pay them on time? How do you function? Parshat Ki Tetzeh gets into the nitty-gritty, into the personal. How am I reflecting everything that we built up in Parshat Shoftim? As a klal, we have leaders, hopefully. We have a Sanhedrin, we have a Melech, we have Kohanim, we have Levi, we have a Navi. Hopefully all of those people are reflecting Ratzon Hashem and building a society that's of Ratzon Hashem and taking us into wars that reflect what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be doing when we go out to war. Who am I in the context of that war, and who am I in the context of that society of Eretz Yisrael? He moves on to the issues of me as an individual and putting the emphasis on me as an individual. How do I as an individual live in the context of Eretz Yisrael? How do I take all of these mitzvot, all of these many very detailed mitzvot, and live a life of Kiddusha, and live a life of godliness in the context of Eretz Yisrael? And again, just as the Torah itself is moving from Klal Yisrael as Klal into the individuals, so again, then it also makes sense thematically that it's moving from broader, more global mitzvot to every other. Now we're dealing with a lot of detailed mitzvot, a lot of individual mitzvot. We're moving from the general to the specific, both in the realm of Klal Yisrael to the individual in Klal Yisrael, and broader mitzvot now to nitty gritty detailed mitzvot in everyday life. But because this parsha has so many different details, so many, it's just full of mitzvot. So I don't have any good explanation of how every single piece, every single mitzvah in this parsha leads into the next, deals with the next. My Rebbe in his shirim said that he has no exceptional level of clarity on that either. But he does bring up a very important concept, which is a great place to deal with it when, in this context, that we don't know necessarily, or I don't know what the connection between each and every single one of these mitzvot are. There's a machloket in Shas about when we darshan psukim. Are you allowed to darshan smuchim? Are you allowed to darshan things that are next to each other? If you have one pasuk which says one thing and the next pasuk says another thing, can you learn something out from the fact that those two psukim are next to each other? Labiyut. And he said that this machloket comes up throughout Shas, and that there are sfrot lakan ulakan. Some do darshan smuchim and some do not. That being said, everyone agrees that you can darshan smuchim in Sefer Devarim. That Sefer Devarim is an exception. But in Sefer Devarim, you can darshan smuchim. You can darshan out the fact that psukim are near each other in Devarim. In and of itself, you know, underneath the surface, emphasizing that Sefer Devarim has a different quality to it, has a different essence to it, that it's again already moving into the realms of Torah Sheba'al Peh, that Moshe Rabbeinu is speaking it out, and even if God is organizing it afterward, or whether God is speaking through him, that it's a whole different quality in Sefer Devarim, that even is reflecting itself in this way, where the whole way that it's organized, you could even darshan smuchim in the context of Sefer Devarim. If this is true, especially in a parsha like Parshat Ki Teitze, I mean, you could take a life, you could make a lifetime project of going through every single pasuk in a parsha like this. And I was going through it again today, and preparing and going through it, and you're in a paragraph that's dealing with one thing, and then the last pasuk jumps to another thing, and half pasuk deals with one thing, and then it goes to another thing, and things that don't seem even on the surface, even within a pasuk, and certainly not even within a paragraph, that don't seem to be related to each other at all on the surface. Take months and months and years just trying to figure out how each and every pasuk, each and every concept here goes, flows one to another. While I have no sense of clarity in terms of how that works for the entire parasha, let's give an example of this. Bring out one facet of this, at least from the beginning of the parasha. In a way that Rashi himself brings out, puts forth a very powerful point, many powerful points, but also shows just how beautifully every single piece of the parsha is meant to shift one into another in terms, even in a parsha like Ki Teitze, where things seem scattered, how everything leads into the next. Taking a look inside your Chumashim, what are the first three topics in Parshat Ki Teitze? We already said the first one. What's the first one? Eishet Yifat Tor. Again, this odd halacha of a woman who a soldier goes and he ends up desiring her and being lustful after her so he can take her. She has to go through this whole process. And then eventually he either takes her as a wife or he has to let her go free. What's the next topic? Isha Snua. It's more than an Isha Snua. Really what it's dealing with, if a person has one wife who's loved and one wife who's hated and ends up in the difficult scenario where the bechor of the hated wife was born before the bechor of the beloved wife, we have a halakha that the bechor is supposed to receive twice as much inheritance as all other children. And this person, because he loves one and hates the other, wants to give the extra inheritance to the son of the wife that he loves. And the source says, you can't do that. It's not your bechor. You can't make that choice. Not allowed to do that. Yeah.
Why doesn't this come up by Rachel and Leah?
Why doesn't this come up with?
By Rachel and Leah. Because they literally refer to her as an Isha Snua.
What do you say? Why doesn't this come up? What do you mean this?
Like this halacha.
I mean, it does. This, I think a lot of these things are reflecting issues in the context of Yaakov, Rachel, and Leah's relationship, which was clearly complicated even on a Pshat level. Certainly on a Pshat level. The deeper sources will probably try to mitigate that a little bit, but on the Pshat level, it was a very complicated relationship. All of the names of the kids are revolving around whether or not, especially the first few, Leah's like desperately trying through each kid to get Yaakov to actually like love her more. And then it becomes competitive, and Rachel lashes out at Yaakov, and Yaakov lashes out back at her in a totally inappropriate way. There's a lot of issues there. It's not good to... If you have two wives, it's almost a guarantee that you're going to end up in this type of situation. It's not a good thing. What's the third topic? Speaking of complicated situations. And we have Ben Sorer Umoreh. A Ben Sorer Umoreh is when a child is so problematic. There's so many issues, specific issues with that child. The way the child acts and behaves is so bad that we actually judge him based on where we're worried he would end up. And if his parents bring him before the Beit Din and they decide that he's a Ben Sorer Umoreh, then they kill him. Now, it's assumed that we've actually never had a case of a Ben Sorer Umoreh, that one, nobody would necessarily fit that criteria, and parents, and the criteria are incredibly hard to fit, and no parents would do that to their child, and. But the Torah is even giving us as a concept is crazy. That a child can be so far off that we would eradicate that child because of what we know inevitably the path that he's going to walk down. Looking at these three topics, and again, it's intuitive, but also Rashi even brings that out at the beginning of the parsha. How does one lead to the next, lead to the next? Why are these samuch? Think about it. You have an eshi yifat toar, is the first topic. The second topic is, there's a beloved wife and there's a hated wife. And what happens to the children of the beloved wife versus the hated wife? Good, how?
The second one comes from the first one, and the third one comes from the
second. Say it out for the first two. In what way does the second one come from the first one? How does one lead to the next one?
Like if a man has a wife, and then he goes to war, and then he ends up marrying another woman, then she becomes Nishasnua.
She will likely become Nishasnua. Excellent. You're going to say the same thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the first smucha that's made here. Again, Rashi brings that at the beginning of the Parsha. Is that when a person goes forth, if a man goes out, again, this whole concept of the Eshet Yifat Torah is for sure not recommended and is incredibly problematic. And the Smichut HaParshiot over here is indicating that if a man is going to go out and he's going to see a woman on the battlefield, and his whole reason for wanting to have a relationship with this woman is because he's overwhelmed by his physical desires for this non-Jew of this other nation that they're fighting, and he can't overcome it. So yes, there's a system within halacha to somehow make it work, but that will inevitably lead him down a path that he doesn't want to go down, which is that even if he takes her as a wife, she will end up being a hated wife. The Yeshiva Torah. The Rebbe takes it a step further. He proposes the following. He claims that lust in and of itself comes from a place of hate. That deep down underlying that negative midah is hate itself. That one of the names that the Gemara gives the Yetzer Hara is the Soneh. And that one of the ways that manifests is in a reality of lust. In a reality of an inappropriate desire. He didn't bring it here. I forget where he brings this as an example. He discussed this in one other place, but I couldn't remember which shir in the hundreds of shir that I have and where it was. But I remember the example, and I went and I looked it up this morning, and it really does come out. There's another case of in Tanakh where one person is very desirous of another person, and things go horribly wrong because of it. Excellent. Hanun and Tamar. In Shmuel Bet, Perek Yud Gimel, Amnon has a deep ta'ava to have a relationship with his, I think, half-sister Tamar.
Yeah.
And he tries to trick her into coming together and to bring the two of them together, but eventually he has to play his hand. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Batigash elav lecho vechazak vayomer la boi shichvi me'achuti. He grabs her and he says to her to be together. And she fights against him. And unfortunately, very tragically, she loses. Pasuk Yudal, v'lo ava lishmoa b'kola. He wouldn't listen to her voice. V'yachazak mimena v'yaneh v'yishkav ota. And he took her and basically rapes her. The next pasuk. And hear the words. In this context, you're like, you almost think like I'm making up the words as I go along. Like it's so powerful and so clearly in line with what we're talking about. Vayisna'eha Amnon. The next pasuk. Vayisna'eha Amnon sin'ah gdola me'od. Ki gdola ha-sina'ah sher sne'ah me'ahava sher ahava vayomer la Amnon kumi lechi. You can even hear, even if you didn't understand every word of the pasuk, you see where it's going. Afterwards, Amnon despised her with a great hatred. His hatred was even greater than his love that he had felt for her. So Amnon said, get up and go away. Immediately afterward. But there seems to be this deep relationship between lust and hatred. And it's something which is a very broken concept in our day and age. In the very made-up word that my Rebbe used, the very Hollywoodian way that we look at the world, this concept of love at first sight, that's a contradiction in terms very often. There are exceptions to the rule. I'm not saying there aren't exceptions to the rule. But the concept of love at first sight is a very broken concept. If the love is dependent singularly on sight, on what you're seeing, if it's coming from a place purely and singularly of physical desire, it's going to go down a very dark path. That's not how life really works. And perhaps that's one of the many reasons that we talked about in other shiurim, why in Hollywood, movies always end at the marriage and never actually talk about what happens once they get married. Right? Fade to black is always at the chuppah, so to speak. You never want to... After that, it's all quote-unquote downhill. Why is it all downhill from there? Because maybe the foundation of the relationship was corrupted. It was problematic. Because lust and hatred go hand in hand. To the point where we say, was that again, that the source of that lust is the hatred itself. It's not to say or imply in any way, shape, or form. Hafuch, I would emphasize the other side. The people who are focused on getting married, and that's something they're thinking about actively or not trying to not think about right now. That for people who are focusing on the concept of getting married, physical attraction is an incredibly important component of a relationship. It's one of the primary and most important components of a relationship. The question is, to what extent is that primary? To what extent is that the source and the origin of the relationship? Or not? Personally speaking, I think this is a recording. Personally speaking, I have a lot of problems with the modern day shidduch system, and I'm sure that anybody in this room who's used it feels the same way, and I know that because a lot of you have talked to me about it, and I know that you actually feel the same way. There's a lot of problems with the modern day shidduch system. I'm a big advocate of utilizing it and using it to your advantage, and then discarding it. If it's going to try to use you, you may as well use it. And that is to utilize it to the extent that I think it's important that before a person goes out on a date with somebody, that they at least have a general concept of who that person is. Do our values generally align? Are we people who belong, who there's some sense that we might belong together? Do we come from a similar place in terms of what we want for a Jewish life and a Jewish family? Are there certain basic things in place? Because then that becomes the ground upon which you're planting the seeds of that relationship. And then that means that once you sit down across the table from that person, no judgments on firmness, or across the lobby from that person, whatever it may be, right? When you're sitting down across the table from that person, then if there is an immediate attraction between those two people, then one can just run with that. Then the goal of dating is to find out, is there chemistry? Is there attraction? And is there also an ability to have dialogue and communication? But you're not fretting about, do we have the same shared values? That shouldn't be the primary thing that you're trying to figure out on a date. Because once you sit down across from that person, it's game over. If the attraction is there, that's going to cloud the mind on everything else, and that's okay if everything else is already set. So I think utilizing the system in order to make sure that the person you're sitting with is somebody who, if the chemistry is there on all levels, then you could just run with it. That's very healthy. As opposed to the other way, where I'm not saying it's bad or wrong, and there are a lot of really great marriages that came through this as well. But I think that there are a lot of dangers into walking into a room in a social situation and hoping to just catch somebody's eye. Because I'll tell you that there's only one reason why, I think it's wrong to say this. I think it's obvious. It's the only thing that could be. I mean, if you're sitting in a room and a boy walks into the room and he doesn't know anybody into the room and he walks over to you, based on what? He was intellectually stimulated by not knowing who you are? I mean, he has no data to work with. It's the only data that he has to work with when he goes over to say hello to you is how you look. And so automatically, then the premise of the relationship is going to be based on physical attraction, which can cloud things. And I'm not saying good relationships can't come from that. And a Kadosh Baruch Hu guides the world and putting together Zivugim is Kasha Kriyat Yamsuf. Not dissing anybody who comes from such a relationship or is interested in such a relationship. But I'm pointing out that it could be problematic. That there's a lot of dangers in that. Those are the things that I get the most frantic phone calls about. From guys and from girls. Rabbi, I was sitting in a car. This was from a guy recently. Rabbi, I was sitting in a car, and we were coming back from a wedding, and I was schmoozing with this girl, and now everybody's calling me. She likes me. I don't know if I like her. Maybe I should go out with her. Maybe I shouldn't go out with her. And he's telling me all of the reasons why they don't match up, and it would be absolutely a train wreck if they were to date. I said, so why do you want to date her? He said, well, I mean, she likes me. And so he liked being liked. So he wanted to date her. So what was the premise of the relationship? She was attracted to him. He liked that she was attracted to him, so he wanted to try it out. And there was it was going to be doomed from the beginning. And I didn't have to talk him out of it. I just talked him through it, and he eventually talked himself out of it. But it's just something to think about. That was bringing it down very lamasa, but I think it's, again, very practical for the stage in life that most of us are at, myself not included. Source number one, topic number one, was Eshitifat Tohar. To be careful, because if the premise of the relationship is lust and hatred, it's almost guaranteed that you will have an ishas nu'ah. That lust will turn into hatred, and there will be a problem. How do we get from topic number two to topic number three? From a hated wife to a ben sorer umore. So for that we need a little bit of Torah Tanistar, and it's brought out in a lot of Mefarshim Binigleh. Torah Tanistar, but Binigleh. The Ramban talks about it in Igarat HaKodesh. There are a lot of different places where it's discussed. It doesn't necessarily line up with the way that modern science has been able to discover things yet. But a lot of our sources talk about the fact, and it's an important concept, that what's in the mind of a person when they're together with their spouse, when there's a union between a husband and a wife, what's in the mind of each one of those spouses, that has a direct effect on the nature of the soul of the child. And if the context of the relationship between the husband and the wife is one of lust and selfishness and hate, the nature of a soul that's going to bring down into this world is a soul that's based in lust, in selfishness, and in hate. And the union between two people who hate each other, that's what's going to produce a ben sorer umore. It's in fact this smichut ha-parshiyot that is the greatest argument against an eshitifat Torah. Yes, it's a strange halacha, but nobody thinks that it's something which is ideal. Everybody thinks it's not ideal. And the way that Rashi puts together this mitzvah parshiyot is that this is going to snowball out of control from what was this lust for a woman to a hated wife and a beloved wife and a broken household and a child who's so distorted, and again, never happened and never will happen, but a child that's so distorted in theory that better to put that child to death than to see them grow up. Incredibly powerful concepts. But that's just one level, again, when we see in Sefer Devarim where the Smichut HaParshiyot, how rich that can bring out. How rich each one of these topics are in and of themselves. And how Sefer Devarim, because it has this concept of where we for sure can darshan smuchim, look how much we've learned about these topics just from the juxtaposition one to another. How damaging Eshitifat Torah, and in parentheses, any relationship based on lust and not on a desire to move toward love is. The broken household that can create, and the deep impact that a union that's not based on positivity and true ahava, love, a goal of giving, hav means to give. Lust is to take, lust is selfish. Ahava, love is to give. Again, antithetical to the way that the outside world looks at these concepts. The two are diametrically opposed. Love and lust are opposites. That if it's a relationship of lust, it will produce a child who's all about selfishness and taking. A child that's totally broken to a level of being considered a ben sorer umore. This also, to wrap things up, brings out again just how deeply personal this parsha becomes. These aren't just topics. These are topics that get into the very nitty-gritty of every detail of our lives. I want to take it further, but I want to stop there. We're going to do Bezrat Hashem on Wednesday. We're going to wrap up our discussion of this parsha to start moving. The year is coming to a close. There are more weeks than there are parsha. I don't know if we're going to pull it off, but there are more weeks than there are parsha. There are more parsha than there are weeks. Yes, thank you. I always count them. More parsha than there are weeks. And what we'll do next time is talk about just how much it goes into the details and what the meaning is in this stage of Sefer Devarim, in this stage in the development of the Sefer, what it means to go into those details, why we're going into those details, and how to truly live through those details in a positive way, moving away from these issues of negativity and bringing it to a place of where we're supposed to end up, we'll discuss Bezrat Hashem on Wednesday.